WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This is going to be one of the great segments of my young life. I don't know if you've heard or not, but it's our 25th anniversary. We shall be spiking the ball long and hard. Joe Enoch, I want to give him a shout out, as well as Bill Cole and Greg Landry from Towson Transfers, as being my consiglieres on our 25th anniversary and memories and ideas. Joe Enoch gave me this idea to do 25 stories of glory, the 25 greatest moments in the history of WNST, beginning on August 3rd, 1998. But the strangest thing about all of this is that I didn't begin in 1998, that this is my 32nd year of doing radio, but really 25 years of having an FCC license, paying people, having a tower, having all of it, running a radio station, running a business, all of that stuff. It's been 25 years, and anytime we celebrate anything that's an anniversary around here, Kenny Albert has to be a part of that. So, Kenny, I'm sorry you missed Costas. I'm sorry you missed Drug City. I'm sorry you're going to miss Pappas on the 29th with Stuart Pittman, the Anne Arundel County Executive. It's all brought to you by our friends at Win Donation and the Maryland Lottery. Dude, I hit the lottery the day I met you up in Pittsburgh at that All-Star game with your sister and your dad at the Penn. You were a kid. I was a kid. I remember meeting you. And next thing I know, you're like the skip Jack's broadcaster, and dude, I'm like a wet boogie in your life. I can't shake you. Apparently I'm even in your book, man. So like, thanks for coming on and being my friend for now going on 33 years, which is more than half of our lifetimes, man.
You look exactly the same as the day I met you. Not sure I do, but I do remember the brief meeting in Pittsburgh, but then the first real meeting was in June of 1990. When I came down and they had a press conference at the Days Inn next to the Baltimore Arena to introduce head coach Rob Laird of the Skipjacks, and I was there as well.
Tom Ebright told me to look for you at that All-Star game, by the way. Now that I'm thinking about it, Tom Ebright made sure I met you.
Well, we did meet there, and then at the press conference, and the rest is history. You were covering the team for the Baltimore Sun. I was doing the radio, and then year two, which was 91-92, a gentleman by the name of Jim Ward at the radio station came to me and said, do you want to do a radio show? And from 4 to 6 every day during the week, I started doing the show, Jerry Coleman. And then I had road trips and I would miss a lot of shows, and we brought you in, and the rest is history. You took it over about a year or two later. And here we are, hard to believe, in 2023, still talking about it.
I'm not going to bore our audience because I probably have told this story before, the night that Marv came in and like was hanging out and you left him behind at thinking, and I had never done radio in my life. Like I had never done.
I had a game to go, dude. So I bolted out of there.
The three of us did the first like 30 minutes and your hour and you left and you're like, I'm leaving you good hands with my dad. And I'm like, Kenny, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to do this. And your dad sat there, and I swear to God, top of the hour, Freddie Robinson, flipped the top of the switch to go to, we went to the top of the hour news, top of the hour, 6 p.m. news. Marv looks at me, puts his jacket on. Nesta, I got to go see Kenny. I'm gone. I'm like, no, you can't leave. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I was frightened, Kenny. Like, I mean, I can laugh about it 33 years later, whatever it's been, but like, your father walked out on me, kicked me off the plank into the deep water, and said to me, you're gonna be fine. And I was right.
It's like throwing a five-year-old into the deep end of the swimming pool, right? You learn how to do it.
Well, your father did that to me, and that's a true story. And it's a true story that you said to me, hey, I'm going to do this show. Do you want to be a part of it? All these years later. Now, you've got a book. So, like, I don't have the copy of your book to hold up the way I would. Tell me about the book, because you hit me a couple of months ago, and you're like, give me your address. And I'm like, is Kenny sending me flowers for my 20th? Is he sending me chocolates for my 25th? And it turns out you're going to send me a copy of this book. But give me the book story, because I know a lot of your stories. I don't know all of them. And all these years later, I learned things about you. I mean, of your relationship with Goose that, you know, when he died, I didn't really realize how close you guys were. And I can't imagine this lifetime of Rangers, all the football, all the baseball. You've had privy to every coach, every league. I mean, this is going to be a good book. I'm going to read this book, Kenny.
Well, I know you've gone through the process. You've written multiple books, and this was my first. And, you know, I was telling somebody yesterday, for 33 years, I've pretty much had the same job. I've been a play-by-play broadcaster. Yes, we hosted the talk show for a while, and I've done a couple of other things in the world of sportscasting, but it kind of hit me. I'm going to be an author. It sounds crazy, actually. I did it myself. No ghostwriter. Had obviously help from my family. My wife and kids chipped in. And
have you ever signed a lot of autographs at once? I mean, I'm just saying, you've watched these ball players at these sign stuff. They had signing rooms for right. Like, have you ever like literally taken a Sharpie and just tried to do it for an hour? Just tried to sign your name on a book. Yeah, for
probably
an hour.
Not more than 10 or 12 in a short period.
Dude, dude, get ready because you're going to cramp. I'm swearing, and I know you're going to sell a lot of books, but I'm telling you, there is something to signing books that's going to be a new experience in your life. You're going to be like, this is kind of hard. You're really proud of it, right? And I mean, really proud of it. I'm still proud of my book that I'm giving them away. I have 200 copies left. I'm giving them all away this week at Costas. But like, there's a part of signing books that's going to be a new experience for you. Because as an author, it's the weirdest thing in your life, being cramped from signing books.
Well, I look forward to that part of it. It was a great experience. Started during the pandemic when I was home for 146 days in a row and had a lot of time to myself. With the family, obviously.
You're a play-by-play guy. No, you're not. There's no more sports. What?
Well, you know, you obviously had a terrific writing career. In high school and college, I did a lot of writing for the town paper, the school paper. So writing was in my background a little bit. And I enjoy writing. And I wanted to do it myself. I had spoken to a couple of writers, thought about maybe using somebody. But the bottom line was, it's my stories. I wanted it in my voice. And I got it done. Started during the pandemic, put together an outline, some sample chapters, and then really over the last year and a half to 2 years, last summer, I had a lot of free time, finished it up, and have gone through the editing and correction process over the last 4 or 5 months as well.
I wish I had spell check for the first book.
A lot, you know, it's amazing how much you miss, right? Like, every time you go back and read it, you find three more spelling.
It's the damn apostrophes in the second book, you know? So, yeah.
Exactly. But anyway, a lot of goose stories about our 8 years together. I did spell your name right as well in a couple of places.
N-E-S-T-E-R, right?
I spelled it right. Spelled it correctly. But it was a lot of fun. It basically starts with my early life, born 3 months premature. I tell that story.
Wow.
I was in the hospital for 2.5 months.
Dude, I've known you 35 years and I'm learning things. God, it's beautiful.
1 pound, 15 ounces when I was born, and I went down to 1.8. After.
Dude, you're a miracle, Kenny.
So I tell
that
story.
All right.
Story about growing up and going to a lot of games, and then my high school and college days and some of the experiences, and then getting hired by the Skipjacks is a big part of it. There's an entire chapter on my 2 years with the Baltimore Skipjacks. So I'm sure you'll look forward to that.
Is there a chapter on the little room that smelled like smoke where we had water battles in our first year in the studio, or no?
Yeah, I'm not sure that made it in, but definitely.
It's a pretty good story, though. I just told it.
It was about the Skipjacks, the radio show. And then I go into getting hired by Fox in 94, and then a chapter on each sport, stories on hockey, football, baseball, basketball. Memorable games, stories about color analysts I've worked with, travel tales, a chapter on the 8 Olympics I've worked, 6 Winter wow. Olympics, 2 Summer Olympics, a chapter on the COVID years and how we broadcasted games during that period, a lot of family stories, and it was a lot of fun. I'll give you, you know, a couple of quick ones. You mentioned Barry Trotz, who was also in studio with us one day back in 1991. He came in and sat with us and did the show. He was the assistant coach with the Skipjacks. Now he's the third winningest coach in National Hockey League history. Won a Stanley Cup, obviously, with the Capitals. One of the rare plane trips we took with the Skipjacks. We would always bus to Hershey and Binghamton and Utica and New Haven and Portland, Maine. Everything was a bus trip. But once a year, we would fly to the Maritime provinces in Canada, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, New Brunswick. So we had a Skipjacks road trip during the 91-92 season. We took 3 flights in one day, Baltimore to Boston, Boston to Halifax, and then Halifax to Sydney, Nova Scotia. And it was a small regional jet. There were probably 25 of us in the traveling party, right? We had 20 players.
Cape Breton Oilers?
It was the Cape Breton Oilers, exactly. And it was myself, two trainers, two coaches, and 20 players. So 25 of us. There were probably 30 seats on the entire plane. And they told us the big hockey equipment bags and the stick bags would take priority. And a lot of our personal luggage would not make it on. And we probably wouldn't get it until the next day. So we take the three flights. We land in Sydney, Nova Scotia, about 4 in the afternoon. And it's a really small airport, one room. We go down
there. How many people live in Sydney, Nova Scotia? Is this 10,000? It's a village, literally, right?
It's a small town. So we go down the steps off the plane onto the tarmac. There's a gentleman standing at the bottom with a clipboard. And he has some names on it. He pulls me over and says, "Is this you?" "Yes." I thought maybe he wanted me to identify what the luggage looked like that would be coming in the next day, right? This was before the roller bag, so everybody had different luggage, different size and shapes. So he takes me into a room and starts questioning me. "Is your passport valid? Have you ever been arrested? Do you know anybody that's in trouble?" And I'm thinking, you know, I knew I didn't do anything, but I'm wondering what's going on. And then they put me in a car, an official car. Two older gentlemen start driving around and asking similar questions. And finally, after about 15 minutes, they pull up to a hotel and they say to me, "Do you know Jimmy Wiseman?" Jimmy was the longtime Capitol security chief down in D.C. His brother was the police chief up in Sydney. He set the whole thing up because Barry Trotz wanted to get me back as a practical joke. I had interviewed him months earlier. He said something that came out funny. I went and played it for the players. They thought it was funny. They repeated it to him that I played it for them. So once a year, they would pull this practical joke on somebody, a player, a trainer, a broadcaster. So a fake arrest in Nova Scotia, set up by Barry Trotz. And every time I see him, he makes sure to tell the story to whoever's around us 30, 32 years later. So
do they feed people well in Canada in jail? I'm just wondering.
Never stepped in jail, only into this small room.
And you would get fresh fish in the Sydney, Nova Scotia jail.
But the story lives on. Story lives on 32 years later. But just stories, like I said, about travel, the Olympics, the various sports, a chapter giving advice to young broadcasters, high school and college students. So, you know, hopefully I'll definitely be sending you a copy. Hopefully you'll enjoy it and get through the whole thing. But it was a lot of fun.
I want to ask you, because I don't even know when
for the listeners and viewers, Nestor, it is available on pre-order. You can Google it. It's called A Mic for All Seasons, M-I-C. The I is a microphone. And one of the things I'm most proud of and honored, the forward, there are two forwards, Wayne Gretzky and Walt Clyde Frazier.
Nice. Two for two. Two of your compadres through all of these years.
Well, exactly. My initial idea was to have one person from each of the four sports that I've worked with. But the publishers told me it's a little too much clutter on the cover. We don't want four names. So I narrowed it down to the great one in Clyde.
Well, I tell you what, that's inside New York and inside Canada. You've got all the bases covered. Kenny Albert is here. He was the one who actually started the show, that started the station, that begat WNST. And here we are all these years later. He's got a book out now talking about it. So I wanted to ask you this. I've run stats for you. I remember one night in St. Louis 25 years ago, you're doing hockey, you're doing a radio broadcast, the television part of what you do. And I would even make this as current as last weekend when you were in here calling the game. Everybody hated you and all the national because you were too pro-Yankee. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think Ken even likes you. But either way, because that's the way we are in Baltimore, how different is doing what you do now than even what your father was doing, or even what you found at Fox 20 years ago when you're a kid? But I feel like to some degree, the technology of all of it and the rules and staying up with, like, just the fact that you have the hotline to Mike Pereira, you know what I mean? Like, we have all that going on, people gambling on it legally now. We can actually talk about it. They all do. Big Poppy does. But from the broadcasting standpoint, from you showing up and doing a game for any of the four sports, do you still have the big board that you always did, that was always in your apartment when I came down there? You still do it the same way, or are you more digital in the way you do it?
I still do those boards the same way, all by hand. I'm old school. I feel like you remember a lot more when you do it by hand. I have a file cabinet here to my left where I have all of them from each and every, almost every game that I've ever done. I'd say 95% of them are in this file cabinet from all sports. I go back and reference the next time that I have a particular team. What's changed, though, is the technology and the information that's out there that helps you with the preparation. When I first started with Fox in 94, they would send us VHS tapes of each team's previous game, but we wouldn't get those until Wednesday. They would have to make copies of them Monday, send them out on Tuesday. We get them on Wednesday. Now I could tape games at home off DirecTV. I can watch games on the NFL Game Pass or the NHL or Major League Baseball app live on tape whenever I want. So you could start the process a lot earlier in preparing for a game on a Sunday. And then when I think back to 94, the internet was in its infancy back then. So Fox would send us articles on each team on a fax machine. I'd have to purchase rolls of fax paper, and these articles would spit out of the fax machine every day. Now, one click of a button on the internet, you could read 100 articles on the Ravens, for example. So the technology's changed. The iPad was a great invention for me.
The preparation part has been made. It's been streamlined for you, right? But the actual, when you're there and the game's live, the game's the game. And I would think that part of it, I just talked to a lot of different people. Kenny, the Orioles threw me out 17 years ago now. That's why you didn't see me at the ballpark, right? Now the Ravens have thrown me out. I don't do the – I mean, literally, it's an amazing thing all these years later that I still exist and that I still do this. But I think about your job specifically as being as similar in many ways – as anything can be, where like baseball coaches, as an example, and you know this, the analytics side of the game has changed every single thing about coaching in every sport, literally.
It has. And I'll tell you one thing about baseball. It has changed this year with the pitch clock. There's obviously not as much time during a broadcast between pitches, between batters. And I think that's a good thing. It's sped it up a little bit. The average game last year was 3 hours, 7 minutes. This year it's 2:40. So they've shaved 27 minutes off Major League Baseball games. But the actual job that I do, once we get on the air, once the red light goes on, hasn't changed that much. I go through the same checklist in preparing that I went through back then. And that involves a lot of reading and watching prior games and preparing charts and pouring through statistics and other publications provided to us. You know, obviously technology, the graphics, the cameras, all that has improved significantly due to technology. But when I'm calling a Rangers game on the radio, for example, it's pretty much the same as it was back in 1995.
Yeah, your dad could walk in, right? And literally it feels, you know, where the mic goes and where it is and where the game is. And the preparation is 98% of what you do, other than the gift of following the puck and like things that you do that I could never do. I could never, ever, ever do. I mean, I marvel at your ability to do it. And specifically your ability. I think it's one thing to know baseball and to be, but I mean, to fly in and out of sports the way you have and do. I mean, dude, I never said this, but I mean, you're becoming a legend because of how many. You said you keep every one of those sheets, right? And I'm going through all of our. I got my Clobber Cleveland signs from '96, my I Believe in Steve's from 2006, the Baltimore Loves Cal with the Free the Birds from 2007. I've got the Ray 252 and the Believe in Joe. I have all this stuff. You call. Am I wrong to say you call 250 events a year? Am I wrong to say that?
So this is what the football chart looks like. No, it's about 130, sometimes 140.
See, you don't do like 80 hockey. 80, of course you don't. Like you can't. But I'm figuring you're working 3 days a week, 4 days a week, which I guess adds up to 130, 140 events, right?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, including travel, October, November, December, I might only be home 1 day a week during that time period because now with the NHL on TNT the last 2 years, we have a Wednesday night game every week. So unless it's in the Northeast, I'm traveling Tuesday, game Wednesday, traveling Thursday, and then we go in for football Friday. We go meet with the home team on Friday at their practice and meet with the visiting team Saturday. So it's more days, you know, than actual games. I might be either on the road or working definitely more than 200 days a year. But
well, people would see you and Goose, you know, and Moose calling a game on Sunday, and they don't realize you got in there on Friday. You spent the whole day Friday with the home team. You're sitting around on Saturday waiting for the visiting team. You spend the whole evening doing that. You're prepping everything. You're at the stadium at 8 o'clock in the morning, making sure everything's right. Like it's not you guys don't roll in at 11 o'clock off the tailgate, you know.
God, and with Goose, there was no sitting around on a Saturday morning. I've told you this before. we were doing something fun, predicated by Goose, whether it was going on a swamp tour, touching baby alligators in Louisiana. If we had a Saints game, if we had a Bills game, we'd be in a boat in Niagara Falls getting soaked. We would go to the practice Friday, home team, go to dinner Friday night, and then wait for the visiting team to get in Saturday afternoon. But with Goose, there was always an activity. And I write about this in the book. I have so many great memories. There are probably six or eight things I've done once in my life, including riding in a NASCAR, you know, going 150 miles,
Charlotte,
three times on the track. There are probably eight things I've done that I've only done once, and it was because of Goose. And I remember some of those events more than the actual games. So that was certainly a great period in all of our lives.
Well, we lost Goose, and I had you on talking about that. And I know you did a thing recently, and I talked to Kyle Richardson just off the charts of former Ravens punter and Super Bowl champion and one of the guys that lives here locally, married a Dundalk girl. I talked to him last week just because we're friends. And I was just, and he was mentioning Goose and the flights and the charity and Goose's family. And I know, I mean, I know his kids from the stage in 2001, writing Purple Rain 1. And then I know them from meeting them 2 weeks before he died here last year. But you've been around his family. You rode in every helicopter. You told me all these. I didn't know of the depth of your relationship. But talk a little bit about what's going on, because his foundation and that's burning bright, and everything he did with Big Daddy up in Long Island. There's still a lot of people fighting Goose's cause.
There certainly are. And I was at an event 2 weeks ago. I'm not much of a golfer, but I did play golf that day. And there's a company, Goose Flights, or a charity called Goose Flights. And it was started by Dirk Vandersteer, who was a great friend of Goose. Dirk owns a private aviation business, private jet business called Titan Aviation. I think Ray Lewis is involved as well. Goose was one of Dirk's partners, and it's out of Florida. And all three of Goose's kids work for Titan Aviation. His son, Anthony, and his daughters, Ava and Samantha, they all work for the company. And they formed a charity, Goose Flights. And they brought a Make-A-Wish child to the Super Bowl, for example. They flew the child in from his hometown to the Super Bowl this past February. They do a lot with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And they also fly retired NFL players who have medical appointments in cities away from where they live, away from their hometown. So they have X number of private jets available, and between the Make-A-Wish children and the former NFL players who have to get to appointments, that's what they do. So this tournament raised a lot of money. There were some great celebrities there from both in and out of the sports world. Michael Strahan showed up for the entire day. He was a great friend of Goose, played golf and stuck around for the dinner. Some other former football players, former New York Yankee, Rick Cerrone. There were a bunch of Ravens there, hockey players, Ken Danico, three-time Stanley Cup champion with the New Jersey Devils. He was a great friend of Goose. So it was a terrific day. Goose's mom was there. I took a photo with her. We affectionately refer to her as Mother Goose. So Rosemary Siragusa was on hand. Goose's brothers, so many of his relatives and friends. It was great to see everybody.
Everybody in Kenilworth was there, huh?
All of Kenilworth, New Jersey was there. But we shared so many great memories. And I'm not sure what the total was, but you could probably go online, Titan Aviation, Goose Flights, and find out how many hundreds of thousand dollars they raised. I had heard after I left that one of Goose's jerseys went for $30,000, which went towards the charity Goose Flights.
Well, Kenny Albert is our guest. He has a book out. I have a 25th anniversary going on. Do you even celebrate anniversaries of anything? I mean, probably the anniversary of the Rangers winning the cup or something, right? But, you know, for you being a part of all of this and identifying as team broadcaster in New York, but national broadcaster through all of this stuff, do you enjoy any part of it more than the other? Like, when it's all over with and you just want to settle down, will you just, like, be the Ranger? I mean, I'm wondering where the end of, not quite frankly, your madness, because I'm 55. You just turned 55. Like, we're the same age. I wonder where it does slow down a little bit for you and how you'll ever be able to do that. I saw Joe Buck. I mean, just a point where, like, you have sacrificed a lot with your family and how much travel. And I know you love it. You've lived your whole life to do it. You got enough money now. You're fine. You're good. How long do you think you're going to do this?
You know, it's a great question, and I don't feel like I'm ready to slow down. And I'm very fortunate to work for three networks, Fox, Turner, and MSG, who are all great about the jigsaw puzzle of a schedule. My family's been so great about it. My wife knew what she was getting into. My kids grew up around it. They didn't know any different. I missed a lot of the weekend stuff, but I was home during the week a lot more than most parents are. So there were sacrifices, but a lot of positives to it. They got to come on some great trips through the years. My older daughter works in the business behind the scenes. She's a video editor at the NHL. She edits hockey highlights all day. There's a new project, NHL Breakaway, which you could find on social media, which she's been involved in editing those highlights. So
hockey's your real love. I mean, it is.
I love them all. I do. I get that question. It's like asking which kid you like better. I mean,
hockey's your love though.
Hockey growing up, you know, was a little bit above the others, but this, you asked about anniversaries. We had our Fox football seminar recently, and this is the 30th season of the NFL on Fox. And there aren't too many of us left from that first year. We took a group photo, and there were 18 of us on the air and production folks. And myself, Howie Long, and Terry Bradshaw are the only ones who have been there continuously for the 30 years. Matt Millen was there and left to run the Lions and came back. There were some folks on the production side who started at Fox, left and came back. But as far as on the air, Jimmy Johnson was there at the start, left to coach the Dolphins, came back. But myself, Terry Bradshaw, and Howie Long, the only three standing, left standing. Now, Joe Buck's at ESPN. He's a Hall of Fame broadcaster. Kevin Harlan was an original Fox broadcaster, has been at CBS and TNT. So a lot of great people are still working, but we're the only three that are still at Fox from year one.
Yeah, why do you hate the Orioles so much? I mean, I'm asking on behalf of everybody that watched your broadcast.
Well, we get this all the time. We were 50-50 on the broadcast. I get it because I do the Rangers locally. Fans of teams are so provincial. They want to hear their local broadcasters. They don't want to hear the national guys. We come in and give a different perspective, but we're 50-50. We told a lot of Oriole stories, but the problem is they lost that game. So Oriole fans think that we were talking more about the Yankees because the Yankees won the game, what, 8-3?
You know what's crazy? I'll give you the true story. And I didn't get to see you when you were in town, and I saw some pictures you were here. I didn't know you were doing the game. I booked you on. You didn't tell me you were in town. We booked this thing, my anniversary. You're in a different city every night. And I knew we were going to get together and visit on the air anyway. It would have been nice to see you. My electricity went out over the weekend. So we spent the whole 100-degree day running around. We were over at El Guapo in Catonsville. We were at the local in a brand new place in White Marsh, celebrating. Then we went down to Costas and the game's over, like, and I see people on the internet. I couldn't hear the game. The game wasn't like, I knew it was a national, I could see from the graphics. And everybody's bitching about the broadcasters. And then all of a sudden I'm sitting there like beer and you showed up and I'm like, ha, they hate Kenny.
You sure that wasn't Sunday night?
They hated that too. Yeah, it's fine too. They hated that too.
I get it. People love their local announcers. You want to hear the local. The local men and women who are doing the game.
No, it's not even that way. They just think that you love the other team if you're the national broadcaster. And especially if the other team's the Yankees. And, you know, like, they're the Yankees. So anything positive you may say about Aaron Judge is construed as completely preposterous to anybody in the – listen, I deal with it all day. It doesn't make any sense to me.
We get it on football. We get it on national hockey. We hear it from both sides. That means you're probably doing a good job down the line. We'll hear it from fans of both teams all the time.
Well, anything you want to kick Trotz in the nuts while he's here since he got you arrested and Hal? I mean, I said to my wife, he and I spent time together in the off season last year, right? He gets canned in the island. He's hanging out. He comes on the show, come down to Nashville, like all this stuff. Then he goes and takes this job that just is going to like eat him back up. He is godfather. He's in. And I don't know that he'll ever leave that job, right? Like, he's got to get it right. He's got to win a cup, do what Poyle didn't do. I mean, God bless Barry, right? He's going to the Hall of Fame, but he's like you. He's a lifer. He's in for good.
He's one of the best people I know. You know, back when I was his road roommate during those two seasons, just a regular guy. You would never know that he's such a successful coach in pro sports if you met him on the street. Great family. And you mentioned David Poyle. He was the one who hired Barry along with Jack Button in Washington and Baltimore back in the late 80s. And David brought him to Nashville, and he was the coach there for 15 years. And now he replaces David, who retired as general manager. So it goes full circle. But wish him all the best. Love seeing him whenever I go to Nashville or we run into each other elsewhere. And he'll do a great job there with the Predators.
He really will, right? Like, I you know, just it's a job you have to want and love. But what a great, landing. What a great story if they were to win the cup with him there. Like, and having been there at the beginning of Fang Fingers and all that. And you've seen the growth of the city and hockey. I mean, it was controversial, right? The Devils were going to move down there at one point, and that was a place that could never support hockey, like Tampa, right? Like, Tampa's never going to support hockey. I mean, what your eyes have seen in hockey for communities embracing the sport, I mean, say what you want about Bettman one way or another, going back to Ziegler, but whatever that vision has been for hockey in certain markets, it's worked.
Look at this year's final. I was there. I was calling the games. Vegas and Florida. When we were doing our show back in 1991, if I told you that Vegas and Florida would be in the Stanley Cup final, you would have thought I was crazy. But the atmosphere in Vegas is unbelievable. It might be one of the best in the entire league, both inside the arena and outside where they watch the games on the screen. You mentioned Tampa. They've won 3 Stanley Cups now. Florida gets to the final this year. The success in Nashville, they've gotten to a Stanley Cup final. Dallas has won a cup. The Arizona Coyotes, not great success lately, but they went deep into the playoffs back in 2012. And Austin Matthews, one of the best players in the league, admits he would never have played hockey if not for the Coyotes. He grew up in the Scottsdale area and started playing hockey in the Junior Coyotes program. So we have kids who've grown up in California, Wayne Gretzky going to play in LA. That really started things going. And now you have all these teams in the Sun Belt. The Final Four this year were all Sun Belt teams: Vegas, Florida, Dallas, and Carolina. 4 teams in the Sun Belt in the NHL.
Carolina's another place that, like, 30 years later, like, we all miss the Whalers, right? We all miss, you know, the Bonanza. But
by the way, in Baltimore, walking on by the harbor in Baltimore the other day, walked past a gentleman wearing a Hartford Whalers golf shirt. I started singing Bonanza in my head.
Right, absolutely. Well, Kenny, the Vegas thing's fascinating to me because my ex-girlfriend from many years ago, and you'll know the year, we sat inside of New York, New York in early June. Felt like it was late May then, but it was early June. We were out in Vegas on a bender, and it was the night that the Sabres got robbed of the Stanley Cup by the Stars, right? So that game was 5 periods, 6 hours long. I was rolling like dice in between periods. We were in this little restaurant called Il Forneo, Italian-themed restaurant inside New York, New York. And I saw the Stanley Cup get raised there. I sat in the corner bar. I sat there for 6 hours watching the game. And that was in 99, whatever year that was, right? 2001, whatever that year. You know better than me. You're the hockey historian. So all these years later, my wife and I are in Vegas the night that the Capitals, my team, Barry Trotz, my guy, wins the cup. I was in the bowels of the T-Mobile Center. You were there. And with the Stanley Cup on the ice, Ovechkin, Tony Robbins, all this stuff happens. My wife and I were there all night until the cup was in the locker room and we're all leaving. Then we were going to go to the party. And my wife and I walked out of the T-Mobile Arena and we made a right turn. And I'm at New York, New York. And I walked in. I said, hold on. I want to just go in here and get a beer. It was 2 in the morning, whatever it was, after winning the Stanley Cup. I said, I want my beer to be in that spot where I was. And I couldn't believe that they had a team, that there was a Stanley Cup, that this weird transactional thing 20 years later in my life happened, that I'm like, did this just happen? And now the Vegas Stars are like, you know, the Knights, I should say, are a thing, like really a thing.
They've done an unbelievable job. George McPhee is the general manager, was the general manager, now the president, who came from the Capitals. They did such a terrific job with the expansion draft and some other deals they made. They've been a team for 6 years. They got to the Stanley Cup final their first year, and they won it in their 6th, which was predicted by their owner, Bill Foley, before they ever played a game. He said, I expect us to be in the playoffs year 3, win a Stanley Cup year 6. They won a Stanley Cup year 6.
Seattle Kraken have that going on right now too, or no?
They got to the second round this year. So Ron Francis is their general manager. They've done a great job as well.
You say Ron Francis, I'm going to play Brass Bonanza again. Kenny Albert is here. Yeah, I still got a hockey heart, Kenny. You know, I mean, I'm not watching every night anymore. I'm stuck on this Oriole first place thing that feels really weird to me. We're all Lamar'd up around here. What game are you going to piss off the Ravens and say bad things about Lamar? You got Lamar on the calendar this year yet or no?
Don't have a schedule yet, so.
Well, it's weird because the games aren't normal anymore, right? Like, you could easily have a Lamar AFC game because it's not as proprietary as it once was.
There'll be more of those crossover games. Fox still is primarily NFC. If I'm not mistaken, each NFC team is guaranteed 9 games on Fox now. It used to be more clear cut where every NFC road game was on Fox and AFC road games were CBS. NFC still primarily Fox, AFC primarily CBS, but more crossover games than we've seen in the past.
I'll tell you what, for you, our parting gift is a Spank the Yank sign from 1996. This is from this is from the Jeffrey Mayer era. So we're going back. It doesn't even say WNST on it because I didn't have a WNST yet. Looney's Pub is still around, though. So's Della Rose's and Amici. So we had some great sponsors even 27 years ago. Kenny, I love you, man. Good luck with the book, right?
Had a great lunch at Sabatino's. Had to go back to you mentioned Tom Ebright, the old former owner of the Skipjacks. He's the one that introduced me to Sabatino's. I still try to get back when I'm in Baltimore. And it was a quick trip. I actually drove home after the game, had a family wedding the next day. So didn't spend as much time in Baltimore as I would have liked, but hopefully next time.
Next time you get a proper crab cake, none of that tourist nonsense. Hope you got a little bookmaker down there at Sab's. All is well.
Absolutely.
Hey, man, Yankees come to town, they take over, right? So, I mean, there's fans everywhere spending money. That's a Baltimore positive thing. It's even more Baltimore positive when we beat them in a season series. And we're in first place and they're in last place, which makes it more fun. Kenny, when's the book come out?
October 10th, available for pre-order now. Barnes & Noble, Amazon. You can Google it. A Mike, M-I-C for all seasons. Triumph Books is the publisher.
All right, well, maybe you'll get a game that week. That's my 55th birthday, October 14th that week. So I will reach to you when the book comes out. I'll hold it up, and we'll tell stories about how the Orioles are about to win the World Series.
Look forward to it.
There he is, Kenny Albert. You can find him out on the interwebs. He's on social media. He's a little reclusive and somewhat quiet and shy and bashful and introverted in real life. But he is the broadcaster for all seasons and all sports and is really – not the spiritual godfather, the actual godfather of the time he walked up to me and said, Nestor, I'm going to do radio. Do you want to do a show with me? And here I am all these years later, owning a radio station for 25 years. It is our 25th anniversary. We're celebrating all month on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll have these instant lottery scratch-offs. We had a $100 winner a couple of weeks ago. We're going to be at Pappas on the 29th. We're going to be at Fadley's. We're going to be at Hollywood Casino at the Barstool Sports. And all of those dates are now up, as well as our 25th anniversary stuff and the 25 stories of glory at BaltimorePositive.com. We got a pennant race in Baltimore. What's that, Kenny?
Happy anniversary.
Oh. Happy anniversary. Happy. We got a real pennant race going on here, and Kenny's got some game to call, though it's not hockey just yet. Stay with us. It's BaltimorePositive.com.